The Asian Classics Institute presents Lojong, Developing the Good Heart, with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in June of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 3.
We didn't quite finish the last lojong we were on. We ran out of time. And we were on the 8 verses, and we were in the middle of the last verse. And the last verse says, Dedakungyan chugeki dobechimim ma bakbar. So all of these things that you're doing for other people, for example, in any situation, any time interacting with another person, if somebody's going to get the short end of the stick, you take it. And this means everywhere. This means on a bus, on a subway, standing in line for some tickets, waiting for the bathroom, who's going to wash the dishes, who's going to clean up, who's going to do the dirty work, who's not going to get on the bus, who's going to get the worst seat. Once you've studied Lojong, it has to be you. Period. And then I said, don't let your mind start diluting it. Don't let your mind start saying, oh, well, you know, I really have to get there. I have a Dharma class, you know, or something like that, you know. Your mind will start to dilute it. And I had students come up to me and say, well, you know, what if this happened, you know, and I took the loss myself, and it would be really bad, you know. I said, no, don't hold the line, okay? There's a line right here. The lojong is creating a line here that you've never been there before, you've never lived there before, and this line is in a new place, and everybody else gets what they want first, and you come last. Okay? And everybody else gets the advantage of a situation, and you get the loss. And you take care of other people invisibly and anonymously, and they never know it. And that's the principle of lojong. And don't let your mind start pushing the line back and say, come on, let's be reasonable. You know, you've been reasonable all this time and you're dying. You know, I mean, the reason you're dying, the reason your body is mortal is because you've been acting that way. Really. When you study highest tantra, they explain it physically why you're getting old and why you have to die. And it all has to do with that attitude that we've been holding up to now. If you could get over that attitude and stop that attitude, that is how you reach a deathless paradise. And you can go there. And many, many people have gone there. And you never will go there if you don't change that line. If you start letting the lojong get diluted, you'll never change. You'll live like you are, which means you'll die. Okay? You'll be like that. I was studying for the next class, the Lojong Dunduma, the 7-point Lojong, very famous. And I was looking through, we have about 40,000-50,000 pages of catalogs. I'm trying to figure out who wrote this stupid thing. You know, one catalog says this Geshe Chikawa. One catalog says Gyalse Tome Sambo. One catalog says Serlingba. One catalog says Lord Atisha. One book says the Lord Buddha wrote it. You know, and I'm like all confused and I'm trying to figure out who wrote this thing, you know. I mean, it's the most famous Lojong there is and nobody knows who wrote it. I went and asked Rinpoche, who wrote this thing anyway? I think it was Chikawa, I don't know. You know, and we're looking and I'm studying and there appears to be a commentary by Chikawa before the root text was written down and 200 years later and the whole thing is confusing. Then finally, you know, I get it all down. It was secret. You know, the Lojong was secret until about 1200 or something. It was kept secret. And then you say, why? Why keep it secret? And then it has all these explanations that people couldn't handle it and they would disrespect it. You know, they would say, sounds nice, not practical. You know, or they would by refusing to live by the Lojong, they would disrespect the Lojong and collect more bad deeds than if they had never heard it. So they kept it secret. You know, and then around 1200 they started to teach it openly. They taught the Lam Rim openly for 200 years before they taught the Lojong openly. Because they figured people couldn't handle it. And people would start to disrespect it. And people would come to Michael Roche and say, yeah, take the loss myself, but this one thing, you know, at work, you know, it would be crazy for me to take the loss. It would be crazy for me to give all the advantage to the other person. They're really bad. It's unjust. The root text says unjust, okay? Forget the unjust and the just. It says, it says that. It doesn't say in a reasonable situation where you deserve the benefit or the profit out of a situation, then take it. It doesn't say that. It says when the other person's screwing you, take it. Okay? And God bless them and help them and give them everything they dream for. You know? And most people, that's why the Lojong was secret. And maybe we are disrespecting it also. Be careful. Okay? I mean, it's very holy. If you think it's just some nice, cute little verses that some guy wrote and people say these are miscellaneous texts, you know. In all the catalogs, these are miscellaneous texts. They're only one page long. Oh, must be miscellaneous. Not very important. Heart Sutra, 2 pages, okay? Be careful, all right? Very holy. So tonight we're going to finish the last verse of the 8 verses. And he says, don't let your practice of the Lojong be polluted. Don't let your Lojong practice be made corrupt by thinking of the 8 thoughts. And then we went over them. And they're very difficult, you know. Most people, I think it was Nietzsche said, everyone's a good philosopher when their stomach's full, you know. And then philosophy goes out the window when you're hungry, you know. And, you know, as long as you're feeling good, you practice Lojong. And the minute you get sick or something, you start being grumpy and you start acting bad to other people. That's not Lojong, okay? Or you know, you just made some extra raise at work, so you're generous and friendly to everybody on the way home. And then when you get your pink slip or when you get cut your salary, then you're grumpy for 3 days and you're mean to everybody. You know, no, you can't do that, okay? He says, mabakbar. Mabakbar means don't take this beautiful holy water and throw crap in it. You know, that's what the word means. Don't take the Lojong and make it corrupt with these worldly thoughts, okay? And then we, you know, I indicated last class that a later Lama named Chankyo Rinpoche, who's later to become Pabongka Rinpoche, and was the emperor's Lama. That'd be like being Lama to Bill Clinton or something, or better, okay? He was the Lama to the emperor of China. He said, no, the 8 thoughts here are more profound. There's something different. And I'll give you those 8. And then we'll go on to today's a different Lojong. Hello? Somebody has to teach me how to use this. Oh, okay. The last verse of the 8 verses is very, very profound. And what it's saying is, according to Chankyo Rinpoche, you cannot practice Lojong unless you understand emptiness. Okay? And if you read, there's a lot of versions of the 8 verses which only have 7 verses, because they thought verse number 8 was too heavy for people. Okay? And you'll see versions throughout scriptures where there's only 7 verses. So the last verse is really, you have to do all this Lojong stuff, and the only way to succeed at Lojong stuff is to stop believing that things are not empty. Okay? You have to understand emptiness to practice Lojong properly. If you don't practice Lojong with an understanding of emptiness, you will fall into the 8 thoughts that we talked about last time. When you feel good, you'll practice Lojong well. When you feel bad, you won't practice Lojong well. When you're getting something, you'll be happy. When you're not getting something, you'll be unhappy, and it'll affect your Dharma practice. Those all hinge on not understanding the real nature of existence and not understanding emptiness. So Chankyo Rinpoche says, let's stop fooling around. He's not talking about those 8 emotions. He's talking about 8 kinds of wrong understanding of emptiness. And if you get down to those 8, you wouldn't have the other 8 anyway. So let's get down to the real 8, okay, which is Ta Ge. Say Ta Ge. Ta Ge. Ta means extreme. Like if you had a lama who had gone to the final limit or final edge of enlightened behavior and being, you might call him Tar Chin. Gone to the Ta. Okay? That's what Tar Chin means. Okay? That's what our root lama's name means. Okay? So Ta means a limit. Sometimes it can mean a cliff or, you know, like that. Or the edge of a table or the edge of a cliff. Ta Ge means 8. 8 different, you can call them the 8 different cliffs that you could fall off. Okay? If you have these 8, it will screw up your Lojong. Like the root text says, your Lojong, this pure, beautiful crystal water, will be, it's like if you threw dog food into water or something, you know? It'll be this ugly, dirty water. If you can't divorce it from these 8 wrong ideas about what? About emptiness. Okay? You cannot practice Lojong successfully unless you understand emptiness. Okay? If you understand emptiness, you can do those 7 verses, which are very hard to do. But if you understand emptiness, no problem. If you don't understand emptiness, it's like suicide attack. You know? It's like walking into a minefield without any armor or something. You know what I mean? It's crazy. To try to practice those 7 verses, to try to give other people the benefit and take all the loss yourself, for example, if you don't understand emptiness, you'll probably fail miserably, and it'll be painful. If you do understand emptiness, it's a breeze, okay? So you have to avoid these 8 thoughts, Ta Ge. They all hinge on say, Ngowa, Trupa. Ngowa, Trupa. Ngo means essence or nature, essential nature. Okay. Ngo wu means by the essential nature, and drupa means to exist. And it means that things could exist from their own side, or things could exist through some nature of their own. Okay. Ngo drupa means the idea that things could exist from their own side. That this is a pen, that this blue and white cylinder is a pen from its own side. And not because of some way that you're looking at it. Okay? If this pen was, oops, sorry. I didn't know a dupa. If this blue and white cylinder were a pen from its own side, then any creature that walked in here, including a dog or a roach, okay, would say, oh, pen. That's a pen. Okay? But it's not a pen from its own side. So what does an animal see when it walks in here? Oh, there's a blue and white cylinder. I don't know what they use it for. Probably good to chew on. Okay? Who's right, the dog or the human? Is this a nice chewing thing or is it a pen? Who's right? Both. I mean, it depends. If you're a dog, it's a chewable thing. If you're a human, it's a pen. But don't tell me it's a pen from its own side or else the dog would be writing with it and the human would be trying to chew it. Okay? Don't tell me it's a pen from its own side. Okay, don't think like that. If you think like that, then you're holding this thing to be self-existent. Okay? What is this thing from its own side? Right now it's just a cylinder, blue and white. Okay? If I start writing with it, you'll say pen. If a dog walks in here, you'll say, oh, something good to chew on. Okay? Especially a puppy. Okay? And each one is right. Okay? Which proves that the pen is not coming from its own side. The pen is coming from some kind of perception of the viewer. You know, pen is in the eyes of the beholder. Chewable object is in the eyes of the beholder. Okay? There's nothing more pen about this than there is chewable object about it. From its own side, it's just a blue and white cylinder. Okay, that's all. It does not have a nature of being a pen from its own side. Nguan Drupa means it could have a nature like that. Which means there's no such thing as Nguan Drupa. Okay? There's no such thing as a pen that's a pen from its own side. There's lots of cylinders in the world that are pens because you are happen to be seeing it as a pen. But there aren't any cylinders in the world that are pens because they are pens from their own side. Okay? There's no such thing as a cylinder which is a pen from its own side. Okay? You gotta get used to that. If you understand that, you can practice Lojong successfully. You can develop ultimate compassion for other beings successfully. You can truly give up what you want and offer others what they need. But if you don't understand that, you won't succeed. Okay? The key is somewhere there. And Chankyo Rinpoche says, read the verse that way. Okay? What are the eight extremes? By the way, these are very, very famous from a work by Nagarjuna, 200 AD, 3rd century AD. Okay? Very famous. Mula Prajna. Okay? It starts out, Kyewa mepa, ka mepa, chepa mepa, ta mepa. Okay, it's like that. Okay. The eight extremes. Say kyewa? Kyewa. Okay. Things don't start. Ngoa drupa. Nothing in the world starts. Ngoa drupa. Okay? If you want something to start in your life, if you're looking for a new relationship, if you're looking for the start of a new job, if you're looking for a new apartment, none of it is going to happen from its own side. Okay? This is very profound. You want a new apartment? Take care of other people's needs for housing. And you'll be able to find a new apartment easily because that's the only place a new apartment comes from. You need money? Your credit card bills are overwhelming you? Be generous to other people. Give to other people. Okay? And then the money will come. How will the money come if I'm generous to other people? This is very profound. Money is only paper. This is only a blue and white cylinder. Okay? Money is only paper. It's only in the mind of the people who use it. You know, try to give a dollar bill to an Eskimo to buy some reindeer meat up in Alaska 200 years ago. You know, they'll say, are you crazy? Okay? I mean, money is just a convention. Okay? Money is something that has value because you perceive it as having value. Okay? And the same with the pen. Why does everyone in the world recognize the paper that you have as valuable? Because they've collected some karma in the past that you've collected in the past. Okay? That's where money comes from. That's why money has value. Okay? If you have certain kinds of paper, and other people have certain kinds of karma to see it a certain way, they will give you an apartment for this paper. You know? And that's how it works. It's all a perception. Why are they having the same perception of the paper that you're having? Why is everyone having such a lucky perception today that they're accepting my paper in return for an apartment? Okay? Past karma. Okay? You gave that necessary help to people in the past. You and the people around you are forced to see this worthless paper as having the value of an apartment. 500 of these worthless papers, then you can stay in this apartment for a month or something, okay? Or more, okay? But it's only the past karma of you taking care of other people's needs in the past. Okay? That's the only place this money is coming from. That's the only reason people can recognize it as money. You want to get an apartment? Take care of other people's housing needs. You want money? Be generous. Okay? You want a promotion? Make sure that the other people get the benefit out of any interchange you have with them. Okay? And that's the only place they come from. There is no beginning of any object in your life which does not come because you were good to someone else. Okay? Everything is empty. Okay? It's very profound. Okay? Nothing ever will come to you good unless you have done something to take care of someone else. And that's kewa mepo. Okay? Kewa means nothing happens in the world except that you have done something to someone else, good or bad. Okay?
Yeah.
For what? He said, what kind of generous... There's four kinds of generosity. I mean, like giving material wealth, giving love, giving protection to other people. And the highest act of giving is to give people the knowledge of how to give, because then they can make more money, which is dharma. Okay? So that's the four kinds of generosity. Say gakpa. Gakpa. Gakpa means, why does anything stop? Okay? Why does anything stop? If you have a headache or a backache that's really hurting you, how do you make it stop? According to Buddhism, there's only one thing that can ever make a backache or a headache stop, and that's taking care of someone else's pain. Period. And there has never been a headache in the history of mankind that stopped except that that person took care of someone else who had pain. Period. There is no other cause of... There is no other cause and effect relationship going on in this planet. Period. Okay? Headaches do not stop because of aspirin. They do not stop because of something you ate. They do not stop because of you changed your posture. The only reason a headache could ever stop is if you took care of someone else's pain. Period. Okay? But wait a minute, I took a leave, you know. Two didn't work, but when I take three, it goes away, you know. You're telling me how it works and not why it works. A Buddhist has to make the distinction, okay? You're telling me this is how your headache stopped. You're not telling me why your headache stopped, and I can prove it to you, okay? Some people take 50, and nothing happens. Some people take one, and it goes away. Some people don't take any and it goes away. Some people don't take any and it doesn't go away. Okay? Really? That's not why things happen. Okay? And it's just, that's the truth. And no drug in the world will always work like that. It just won't. No headache drug has been discovered. I mean, despite the claims on TV. The reason they have to make the claims is because they're not true. Okay? Really? Okay? I mean, if one pill worked for everybody, just pass it out on the street and that'd be the end of it. It doesn't work for everybody. Why? The only time it works is if you had the karma to make it work, and the karma to make it work is taking care of someone else's headache. You cannot stop. Gakpa means to stop. No good or bad thing in the world ever stops except that you had the karma to make it stop. Okay? Where does that karma stay? It is not self-existent. It does not work from its own side. Okay? It's an impression put in your mind when you help somebody, and when your headache stops, it's because of an impression in your mind which is ripening in your mind. It never went anywhere else. Okay? And if you don't think that impressions in your mind can last from year to year, then you shouldn't have gone to first grade to learn the alphabet, because that impression is still in your mind now. So don't tell me Americans don't accept this principle that you can plant an impression in the mind and it can stay there for years and years. That's why you send your kids to elementary school. Because you want the impressions to stay in their mind from first grade when they get up to eighth grade and they didn't forget the alphabet yet. Okay? Of course impressions can stay in your mind for a long, long time. Okay? People who've been victims of abuse when they were little kids, you know, they don't even remember. And they're still living the results of it 20, 30, 40 years old later. Okay? Don't tell me it can't stay in your mind. Okay? Takpa. Oops. Sorry. That will be takpa. I hope not. Okay. We're on number four? Three. Ooh, we're going slow. Don't worry, still will. Say takpa. Takpa. Dakpa here means unchanging. Okay, unchanging. The day that you reach your Buddha paradise, this cylinder, this blue and white cylinder, along with every other object in this room, along with every freckle on your arm and every hair on your head, even if you don't have them all, okay, every single object in your experience will create great bliss for you. Total bliss. Okay? Every single detail of every object, every curve here, every atom here, every detail of this pen will be like the best physical emotion you ever had here multiplied by a million. Okay? I mean, imagine the best physical feeling you've ever had in your life multiplied by a million, and every detail of this pen will give you the same feeling. Every object in your world will give you the same qualitative emotion. Okay? That's what a Buddha paradise is like. Okay? But if this pen existed as a pen from its own side, it would be immutable. It would always be a pen. It could never be that bliss cylinder that it's going to be. Okay? And by the way, it could never run out of ink either if it was a pen from its own side. And you have to get used to that. The reason a pen runs out of ink, if you're not happy that it runs out of ink, is that you collected the karma to see it run out of ink. It did not run out of ink. You got to get used to that. Okay? If it ran out of ink from its own side, it would be unchangeable, and it never would change from being full of ink to being out of ink. Okay? Because it exists as a full pen from its own side. Okay? If things existed from their own side, they could not change, and everything around you would be Dakpa, unchanging, which is wrong, and that's an extreme, and that's why number three is called unchanging. Okay? Dakpa here is an implication of thinking that things exist from their own side. Okay? I'll say it again. Dakpa is an implication of thinking that things exist from their own side. If everything existed from its own side, nirvana, paradise, would be impossible. You might as well just shoot yourself. Except, you wouldn't change, okay? Alright? Really. Okay, it's only because they don't exist from their own side that everything is possible. That makes life exciting. That makes this world, you know, a jumping off point for Buddha paradise. Okay? Is that it's empty. Thank God it's empty. Thank you. Okay? Thank you for making things empty. Okay. Say chepa. Chepa. Chepa is the opposite implication, okay? I mean, these Dakpa and Chepa are two extremes that result from people misunderstanding emptiness, okay? If you take everything to be the way it appears, you fall into the extreme of Dakpa, meaning nothing ever changes. If someone comes up to you and says, hey, Jay Siller, everything is empty. It's not what you thought. Everything's an illusion. And so Jay Siller says, cool. Nothing matters anymore. I could go break all those vows I was struggling to keep, you know, because nothing matters anymore. It's all empty. It's all illusion, you know. That's called chepa. Chepa is another extreme. Chepa means, oh, then nothing the hell matters anymore. Chepa means everything is, what do they call it? Nihilism, like, okay? Nothing exists. Nothing matters. I can go do anything. Okay? Everything's empty. To think that's what emptiness means is chepa. Okay? Thinking that, if that was true, if emptiness meant that things don't exist or don't matter, then everything would just have to stop. Chepa means that. Those of you who studied the diamond cutter, Dorje Chepa, and chepa is the past tense. Chepa means terminated, stopped, finished, not going anymore. If it were true that emptiness just meant that nothing mattered, then everything would just grind to a halt. Chepa. Okay? Number five. These are extremes that you want to avoid, and if you don't successfully avoid them, you will not be able to study Lojong. You will not be able to do those high spiritual practices, such as taking the blame at work when it's not your fault. Okay? It's beyond most people. And I dare say that most of us in this room, when the poop hits the fan, we will not take the blame. Because there's this whole 95% of your mind that says, are you crazy? What's the point of taking the blame? I mean, honestly, it's not your fault. It's the other guy's fault. Why should you take the heat for him? Okay, your mind believes that. And that attitude has kept you in suffering for millions of years. It doesn't work. It's dysfunctional. It hurts you. Don't believe it anymore. Okay? Try the other one for a while. It's cool. This anonymous Lone Ranger, good guy. Okay? Just running around helping people, not getting any credit for it, you know, going broke all the time. And then slowly your world will change. Okay? You will enter a Buddha paradise by acting that way. Okay? Say Drowa. Drowa. And I'm going to give you number 6 also. Ongwa. Drowa. Ongwa. Drowa. Ongwa. Drowa means going and Ongwa means coming. You can say coming and going. Okay? Believing that things come and believing that things go are two more wrong ideas about reality. Okay? And I think you have to study a commentary here. Okay? It's not general coming and going. And luckily we have good commentaries in our computer bank, and they explain these two words. Drowa here means going from the cause into the result. Okay? Drowa, or going, means going from being a seed to the condition of being the result. Okay, so going here means growing. Okay? Going here means growing. And then coming means to come to a stop. Okay? Like when the seed produces the result and then the seed stops. The seed comes to stopping. Okay? So for the seed to go into the result and for the seed to come out of existence. Let me make sure that's right. Yes. Yeah. He says, coming in the sense of the sprout coming out of the destruction of the seed, and going in the sense of seed going into being a sprout. Okay, I'll say it again. Going in the sense of a seed going into being a sprout, and coming from the sense of a sprout coming from the destruction of the seed. So Nagarjuna says again, Arya Nagarjuna, there's no coming and there's no going. Which means there's no cause and effect from its own side. Okay? Things don't cause each other the way you thought. Things don't cause each other the way you thought. Okay? If someone's hassling you at work and someone's trying to blame you for something that you didn't do, the way to get out of that situation and fix it is to continually take the blame for other people and take the heat for them, purposely. Okay? It is not to sit there and explain why you're right. Okay? Cause and effect ain't what you thought. And I'll repeat it. Someone at work is attacking you wrongly. Someone at work is blaming you for something you didn't do. The way to stop that blame is not to sit there and explain why it's not your fault. The way to get out of that blame is to prevent that kind of thing from ever happening again, which is never, ever to judge other people, for example. Okay? The real reason you were blamed for something that you didn't do had nothing to do with bad communication or anything like that. It was all caused by you blaming other people in the past wrongly. Period. And it will not be fixed by you explaining to the person why you were right. What's the litmus test to prove what I just said? Next time somebody blames you for something you didn't do, go explain to them why you're right. And tell me how many of you are satisfied. You know, how many people are exonerated by the boss? You know, oh, you're right. That's not your fault at all. I'm glad you explained it to me, you know. I mean, come and tell me how many people we'll take a boat, you know, and we'll say, how many people did the boss say, oh, I'm sorry for blaming you, you know, you're right, you know, it's obviously the other person's fault, you know. You know and I know, 50% of the time, pretty much at random, whether you were right or wrong, you're going to get blamed. Today they were pouring praises on me for doing these business deals, you know, in 2 hours, thousands of diamonds. The whole thing taking a brilliant job, you know, and I'm like, I don't know, I just got here, I didn't do anything different from yesterday, you know. And it's just coming from something you did a long time ago, okay? Don't get excited about it, don't get sad about it. You know, smile, okay, thanks, you know. Tomorrow you're going to yell at me for something I didn't do also, you know. And get used to it, okay. So what's the point of acting crazy like this? You know, sit there and smile when they yell at you, sit there and smile when they praise you, knowing that it has nothing to do with your current behavior. What's the point of acting like that? The point is that you won't collect any new bad karma that will make these bad things happen again in the future. The point of the Wheel of Life painting is to break the wheel at 1 o'clock, which is for you over here, okay? At 1 o'clock, there's these two guys with sticks, blind people, walking along because they don't understand what I'm just talking about. If you can stop acting like that, it breaks this vicious cycle. Vicious circle. It cannot go on if you break it there. Whether they tell you you did a wonderful job, and whether they tell you you did a bad job, and whether you did or you didn't deserve it, just be pure and virtuous and keep your vows, and everything will be perfect in the future. You have to divorce the appearance, the illusion of life from what's really going on. Okay? You're not getting praised because you're so smart. You're not getting yelled at because you're so dumb. You're the same person on Tuesday that you were on Monday. Okay? The point is, in reaction to those things, knowing about emptiness, just play it cool. You know, I appreciate your comment. Thank you. You know, if I did something right, it's because I helped somebody in the past. If you thought I did something wrong, it's because I hurt somebody in the past. Either way, I'm going to stop hurting people right now. Okay, that's all. And if you don't understand reality, you will not be able to practice Lojong. Okay? The whole thing is an illusion. The whole day at work is an illusion. Nothing is happening because of what came just before it. Everything is happening because of the impressions in people's minds that were put there years and years ago. Okay? And if you don't like work, or you don't like to be at work, then be good to everybody. Okay? That's the Lojong. And it's difficult. But it's more difficult if you don't understand emptiness. Right? Okay, 7 and 8. Say, Chik Tade. Chik Tade. Chik means one. Tade means different or plural, you can say. Okay, one or many. Okay? It's one way to prove emptiness. It's called Chik Tan Duma. It's one of the five great proofs of emptiness, okay? This is related to it. Chik means one, tade means many, okay? Is this pen one thing or many things? It's not a koan, okay? I'm not trying to trick you. Chik don't do my karma, my imbeche. Okay? It's neither one nor many. Don't tell me a story. Yes or no? Tama drup or duh? Okay. Tama drup or yin? Okay. No, you lay your traps for me by answering simply and innocently. And if you're right, sooner or later I will fall. This is Buddhist logic. Okay. You could do chikdan tade kano mayin beisha.
Neither.
No, you just say tama drup or yin. I said it's neither one nor many. You can either say yes or no, right or wrong. Tamadu. He said, it's not correct to say that that pen is neither one nor many. Chitan tade kanu mayim batao. You telling me it's neither one nor many? You telling me it's wrong to say it's neither one nor many?
Yes.
Duh. Duh.
Duh.
Duh. Yeah, Karim. Which one is it? Is it one or many? Is this pen?
Did you,
pen. I said one or many. You can say neither if you want. You're gonna get in trouble that way. You tell me it's neither one? So this is not a pen? Right? It's not a pen?
Ultimately not.
I didn't say ultimately or not. I didn't say that. Yes and no. If I'm wrong, you'll beat me. Don't worry. That's logic. Logic is infallible. Okay? Karin. It's not a pen? means, so it's not true when every Buddhist book in the world says that every object in the world is either one or many.
I said every Buddhist book says
no, I said that. That's the proof. That proof hinges on the fact that everything in the world is either one or many. Okay. All objects in the world are either plural or singular. Even in grammar, even in the words we use for objects, it's either a pen or a pen zi. Okay, as Rinpoche likes to say. Okay. Mayimata. I didn't say anything about self-existent or anything like that. Conventionally, if you want to say conventionally, I don't mind.
Okay, conventionally it's a combination of words.
It's plural or singular?
Plural.
Pens? No, it's a combination of parts, but it's one pen.
Yes.
It's one pen made up of many parts, which is to say one pen. Chigimbata. So are you telling me it's one? Is it one? Are you telling me it's one? One pen made of many parts. Yimbata. Okay. Alright. No, it's okay. He's doing it right. This is how a debate goes on for 4 or 5 hours. Before you get to a pen, okay. Okay, it's a pen. It's one pen, alright? So, chik tu dina ta ma yin ba ta. So it's no extreme to hold that it's a pen.
Relatively, yeah.
Right, it's not an extreme relatively, meaning apparently, okay? But from its own side, mo wu drupa, is it a pen? Chik tan ta de yin be yin. Chik tan ta de yin be yin. Okay, it's either one or plural. From its own side, right? Tamadru. Tamadru. Mayimbata. So it's not from its own side, one or plural. Do it. Mayimse. Why the hell not?
There is no self-existent
in the part. Good. You can't say there's one or many self-existent pens, because there ain't any self-existent pens in this room. Okay? There isn't a pen in this room which exists from its own side. So what the hell are you talking about? What are they answering the monastery? Ribungi rada inch katiya. Okay. How many inches is the horn of a hare, please? 10 or 12? That's our big question tonight. You know, is the two-headed purple full-sized elephant in this room got one head or three? I didn't quite catch it. Okay. And you say neither. It doesn't exist. A pen in this room which could exist from its own side does not exist. Okay. A situation at work in which someone is blaming you for something that you didn't ever have anything to do with is created by only one thing. You hurt someone else in the past that way. There is no such thing as a situation at work where someone is blaming you unjustly. There's no such thing. Okay? And if you respond negatively, you just made it happen again. And that's what the vicious cycle of life is. You know, and you will stay in this realm until you figure that out. Okay? You will remain here until you figure that out. Okay? So stop it. That's Lojong. Lojong is impossible to practice if you don't understand emptiness. And if you do understand emptiness, it's the only way to live. Okay? Later. We got him. You can catch me during the break. That's that mind. Don't let it happen. Okay. All right. Last thing on your homework says, Chanya Rinpoche says, the text says that we can be free from the chains of attachment. How does Chanya Rinpoche explain this attachment? And this is the two extremes, okay? And then we'll stop and we'll take a break, okay? What are the two extremes are this. Extreme number one, things are the way they look. Things are the way they look. You know, I'm being attacked at work because this guy was talking behind my back.
Okay.
That's one extreme, and it's wrong. It's not true. You're telling me how you were attacked at work, and you're not telling me why you were attacked at work. Okay? Why did this guy want to attack you in the first place? Why did someone in this office want to talk behind your back? Where did this guy come from? Okay? You can tell me how he did it. You know, he went to the boss's office after I left. You know, 6 o'clock. He was like wheedling, telling the boss this and that. You're just describing to me the process. You're not describing to me the cause. The real cause is that you did it to someone else. Okay? Oh, that's hocus-pocus karma stuff. No, it ain't. Because it's a perceptual thing. It's a perceptual thing. What? What do you mean? There are cylinders and colors and squares and circles moving around your office. You are being forced to see them as a person stabbing you in the back. In the same way you're being forced to see these colors and shapes as a pen. It's the same principle. It is not a pen from its own side. You're seeing it that way because of your past karma. And if you had a dog's karma, you'd be seeing it as a chewable object. And in fact, that's what it is to be a dog. And someday you'll understand that. Okay? But the whole interpretation of all those colors and shapes going on at work is a result of your own past deeds. Your own mind is making you see things that way. Go have a really good cafe latte and a biscotti and come back and don't... And see if it changes a bit. You see? It really does. Okay? I mean, that's a very tiny example of the whole reality of it could change. That office could be a hell, and you know that. And that office could be a paradise, and you can experience that in the future. But you must act in accordance with the lojong. You must understand that these things have no existence from their own side. It's all coming from your mind. Okay, so straighten that out. All right? And that's the teaching. Shemalei Dushu, and then you will break the chains of your life. That's the last lines of the 8 verses, okay? Yay. All right, go have a latte outside, okay? And we'll come back in about 10 minutes, okay? The other extreme is thinking that if everything in your office is just colors and shapes, that everything is just some kind of twilight zone or outer limits or, you know, that everything doesn't exist or doesn't matter or it's an illusion. So I can go to office and do anything I want. I can punch the boss in the head because it's just another square. Okay? It's not like that. That's the other extreme. So either you believe the way it looks, or you think if it's not the way it looks, it doesn't matter at all. Those are the two extremes. And you have to take a middle way between them, and that's why Buddhism is called a middle way. Okay? Okay. All right, we'll start again. Just this announcement. It's very nice to come to Rinpoche's birthday. If you can make it, it's very wonderful. It's a lot of fun. And it's starting at 2 o'clock on June 28th. Also, to repeat the instructions about the Sojong ceremony, those of you who have a tantric initiation from Rinpoche, he has requested that anyone who's ever been initiated from him should come on the 8th of June, which is a Monday, at 2 o'clock down in Howell, to a special ceremony of purification that takes place once a year. And so he expects every person there. So you can get sick or whatever from work. Then you'll have something to confess when you get there. and he expects everyone to have made a good attempt to memorize the text. Okay. On June, what day is it? Saturday, June 6th? The Central Park? Saturday, June 6th, some of our students will be debating at the Change Your Mind Day thing that's sponsored by Tricycle Magazine at Central Park. And you can find out more about it from Aura, or you want to raise your hand? Okay. we were scheduled to have a children's class that day, and we've rescheduled it from, now it's been changed from 2 o'clock to 1 o'clock. Okay, so if you're a parent who's bringing your kids to the kids' class, that's the first kids' class of this semester. Instead of 2 o'clock, please bring them to 6th Street at 1 o'clock. And they're going to be participating in the debate, so we have to prime them. Okay. Also, our illustrious Sangha is invited, and they'll also be debating a little bit. Okay. And, you know, we'll go over all the questions and answers and make sure that I win. Okay. All right. The next lojong that we're going to learn, we're going to do like 5 or 6 lojongs during the course of this class. You've just had the most famous one, the 8 verses. I think in the world right now, this is the lojong which is most taught. His Holiness often teaches it when he goes someplace because it's such a powerful piece. We're going to do a few other lojongs. We're going to do one brief one tonight that has come down through the Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. So it's very interesting that at the point of Lojong, as Buddhism begins to enter Tibet, is where all the traditions meet together. And I like it. I think it's a very nice place to get acquainted with all the different traditions. It's not my intention to teach the Sakya or the Kagyu or the Nyingma traditions in this class, because my hope is to give you one consistent lineage from Buddha to the present day. And I want you to learn one way of studying Buddhism that's coherent and internally consistent from the time of the Buddha up until our root Lama, which is a pure, direct, consistent, and lineage taught in one way. Okay, and that's my shtick. Okay, I'm a Gelugpa monk, Geshe, and that's what I'm training you in. So you will have one pure lineage that works, and you will be able to achieve enlightenment based on those teachings. There are also other beautiful, fantastic, perfect lineages going on in Tibet, and to study them would take another 5 or 6 lifetimes. But it's cool to meet them, it's cool to be with them, it's cool to relate with them. We do that, you know, all the projects we do, we've been, like, we went down the Nyingma, a lot of the group here went to the Nyingma, the main Nyingma monastery in the West, down in Poolsville, and we had a wonderful Vinaya teachings there, and it was very cool. And like that, I taught the Kagyu group here in New York for 9 years, every week. And so we have really good relations. I want you to get a taste of that beautiful lineage. Okay, it's not what we're going to be doing all our time here. But I think it's a good place. In the years of the Lojong, all these lineages were in one town or one area, and they were all just starting out. And so it's a good place to take a photograph of where they all came from. So I'm going to introduce you to a teaching of a Kagyu master named Yang Gumba. Okay? He is one of the founding fathers of the Drupa tradition. Within the Kagyu, there are different sub-lineages, like the Drupa, or the Karma Kagyu, or the Digun Kagyu, and there's different kinds of Kagyu. So we're going to be looking at a beautiful lojong by one of the founders of the Drupa Kagyu. Duk normally means Bhutan, but in this case it refers to an area of Tibet where there was a famous monastery, and they took the name of that monastery and became known as the Drupa Kagyu. Okay? So we're going to study a book by Yang Gumba. Not really a book, but more a collection of sayings. And since it's a tradition never to refer to a lama by what we call their naked name, you don't call them Hey Nagarjuna or Hey Tsongkhapa. You say Arya Nagarjuna or you say Jaya Tsongkhapa. Okay? We call him Gyalwa Yangamba. So you have to put Gyalwa here. And Gyawa means victorious one, meaning he is being called a Buddha. He is a Buddha. Okay, they consider him a Buddha. Okay, Gyawa means the victorious Buddha. The book you're going to study, or the you're going to get a collection as you go out tonight of his teachings, and you will get a very good sense of the beauty of the Kagyu tradition. Okay, which is short, sweet, sharp, powerful. Okay, and these are called Dhammak. Dhammak means personal advices. Like Dhammak, when you say it in Tibetan, it's almost like things that a teacher said to their student while they were in the car going to Vermont or something. You know, these are like somebody brought up a subject, you know, about emptiness, and they're saying, what about that? You know, and you're sitting around having root beer and you start talking about it, and somebody's like secretly taking notes. And these end up being Dhammak texts. Okay, these are like aphorisms or personal advices that were given by a lama, often in a very limited context between close disciple and teacher. These are called Dhammak. Okay. Where did he learn his stuff? You know, where did he get the Lojong teachings? Well, one of his teachers was say Sakya Pandita. Okay, Sakya Pandita, as we mentioned in the Friday night class, one of the greatest lamas ever to live in Tibet, lived about 1200, did stuff like memorizing the 8,000 verses of Prajnaparamita in Sanskrit. You know, would wander around Tibet reciting it in Sanskrit, okay? 8,000 verses, it's 1,000 pages. And stuff like that, brilliant, great, great lama. His nephew, Pakpa, invented the mandala in 37 piles, which we studied. Brought Buddhism to Mongolia, became the teacher of the Emperor Kublai Khan, and met this weird Italian guy there named Marco Polo. So, very cool lineage, alright? That was one of his teachers, and the other one was so, by the way, there you have a Sakya Kagyu conjunction, and Sakya Pandita being one of our tantric lineage lamas, you have a Sakya, Galupa, Kagyu, probably Nyingma in there somewhere. You know, in those days it was very much a big family, okay? Say, Gutsangba. Gutsangba. Gutsangba is a great Lojong writer himself. We study some very beautiful Lojongs by him. These are both Lojong writers that our tradition also calls upon. And when you read the writings of like Pabongkor Rinpoche, he's pulling out quotations from Yangunba and Gotamba. Very beautiful ones. They're very poetic and very beautiful. Okay. I wanted to spell Drukpa Kagyu for you Tibetan guys, because it's on your homework that way. And that's how you spell Drukpa Kagyu. He's the Lama whose Lojong you're about to study, Gyawa Yangunba, is one of the founding fathers of the Drupa Kagyu tradition. Okay? I thought I would read for you in English some of his advices, okay? They're very short. And then we'll talk about some of the difficult points, okay? So here you go. In Tibetan it says, Duje la tapa meki, she meki tiwa che, korona dewa meki, nyanjung ki kyoshi ke. Okay, it's like boom, 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 okay? In English it's, nothing that starts remains unchanged, have no attachment, cut the ties. There's no happiness in this vicious circle, get tired of it, find renunciation. Jigten la ningbo meki, dun la lote mache, ransen sangye yinki, roshi ki sheje ki sung. Okay, that's it. The world is hollow and meaningless, do not trust the lie. Your own mind is the Buddha, go and meet your friend. Okay. And that's it. End of Lojong. Okay. I mean, that was the first part of his Dhammak. Okay. And then people would study this for years and figure out what he meant. Okay. I think here you see the difficulty of this style of teaching is that you must have a lama there to explain it to you. You can't go around thinking your mind is the Buddha. It's not true. Okay? So you need someone to say, what did he mean when he said your own mind is the Buddha? Go and meet your friend. Okay? And this is where I think, you know, if you feed this stuff to a new student who hasn't studied much and doesn't get a proper explanation, they can fall into the extreme of thinking, I'm a Buddha, I just have to reveal my true nature and, you know, everything's okay. You know? And then they get hit by a car and they're in a hell realm. You know what I mean? So, you have to know what did he mean when he said your own mind is the Buddha. And this is what he meant, okay? And we're going to go through a couple of his verses like that. By the way, this is the whole Lojong. It's only like 5 pages or something. When we say Buddha nature, Sangye Ki Vik, okay? Rangshin Nirik, what they call the nature of the Buddha, Sugata Garbha, okay? It's a very specific thing. Okay? It's a very specific thing. When they talk about your Buddha nature, it doesn't mean that you have some nice little crystal nature inside you, and if you could only clear away all your bad things, this real nature would come out. It's not like that. That's not true. You are not a Buddha inside. Okay? And your mind is definitely not a Buddha's mind. Okay? If you are who you seem to be, and I'm not sure. Okay? In fact, some of you don't even seem that way, but that's another story. What it means is, Rangshin Nirik, Buddha nature, refers to the emptiness of your mind. Okay? The only Buddha nature you have now, the only thing about you which is Buddha-ish, is the emptiness of your mind. Okay, what does that mean? Refer to the... What was that again? Chewable object, right? No, I'm not calling you a dog. Okay. Refer to the good old blue and white cylinder. Okay? Your mind is the same. Okay? Is this a pen or a chewable thing? It's both. Depending on who's in the room. Okay? And the emptiness of this blue and white cylinder is that if you had the karma to see it that way, you would be seeing it as a very nice thing to chew, and that's what it is to be a dog. That's what it is to be born as a dog. Okay? It's to have those perceptions. That's what makes you a dog. Okay? That's why it's so easy to get born as a dog. That's why it's so dangerous to die. Okay? And a human just as validly sees it as a pen. Okay? But by itself and from its own side, it is neither thing. It's a blue and white cylinder. And even that, we got to talk about someday. Okay? Your mind is the same. Okay? You are presently forced to experience your mind as this bizarre mixture of happiness and sadness, goodness and evil, you know, satisfaction and dissatisfaction, up and down, in and out, all over the place. You are forced to perceive your mind that way. Okay? If you had collected better karma, you would be forced by that karma to see your own mind as the mind of an enlightened being. It could have been that way already if you had gotten your act together a few lifetimes ago and started keeping your book. Okay? Started keeping your vows carefully. Okay? And by now, you'd be perceiving this mind, you would be forced to perceive your own mind as a beautiful, enlightened being's mind. Okay? If your mind is the way it is now from its own side, by its own nature, that it's hopeless. Things are hopeless. Can never change. The fact that your mind is empty or doesn't have any nature from its own side is what gives you and me the potential to become a Buddha. That's cool. That's the Buddha seed. That's Buddha nature. You know, that's the potential that you own already to become an enlightened being. Thank God for the emptiness of your mind. Okay? And that's the only Buddha nature you have. Okay? So when he says, your own mind is the Buddha, go and meet your friend, he's saying, if you understood how your own mind is empty, you would appreciate Buddha nature. You would keep your vows, and within a short time, you would be forced to see this mind as an enlightened being's mind. That's all. Okay? But you put this in the hands of an inexperienced American without a lama teaching them, it's dangerous. You know, they'll go and just meditate on their mind and say, oh, I'm a Buddha already, you know, just meet your mind. Okay, you got to be very careful. These lojongs are, that's probably why they were kept privately for so long. Okay? Let me see, there's another one here. I like this one. Nothing but the Dharma means anything at all. Throw the rest out like trash. It all boils down to dying. Pack light and take off now. Okay. We had like a really hard time with the pack light and take it off now. It says, the Tibetan says, take speed with dry meat. You know, and me and Rinpoche are sitting there. I said, Rinpoche, what do you think this means? He says, I don't know. Those lojongs, you know. And there's a couple of meanings it has. I mean, there is a famous Lam Rim teaching about eating the meat yourself, which we've talked about before. And that's a different thing. This one means, you know, don't stop to pack lunch. Don't stop to cook lunch. You know, throw some potato chips in a box and run. You know, in Tibet it was dry meat. You know, you could carry a bag of dry meat for 6 months or a year and you could just walk around. You didn't have to carry anything heavy. You could just take off. Get going on the path of enlightenment. Okay? And he says, throw the rest of your life out like trash. You know, just stop doing what you're doing. Just junk it. Okay? What's the test of what you should throw out and what you shouldn't throw out? He says, it all boils down to dying. And that's what we talked about last week. Okay? You have to apply the test of death to every action you undertake. You know, is my current activity for the next hour worth my life? You know, is this what I would want to die doing? You know, if someone said to me, you have one more hour to live, how are you going to spend it? Would you spend it the way you're going to spend the next hour of your life? Okay? And a Dharma person, a person who's doing lojong, that's the line you have to live by. That's, you constantly have to check the things that you're doing with your life. Is this worth dying for? Because I might die in the next hour. Okay? Is this what I would want to be the last thing I ever did? And don't do anything except that. Okay? And that is an automatic barometer of whether you are spending your life well. Because you will die. Okay, and I have this fight with people constantly, you know. I'm like, they say, why are you doing this? You know, you didn't do your financial reports. You're going to get in trouble. You're not going to get any money. I said, I don't know. I got to practice this morning, you know. I got to do my meditation. I said, yeah, but you're going to lose all this money, $1 million. You know, I'm like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. You know, if I was going to die in the next hour, it's got to be my meditation this morning. It's got to be. I'm sorry, you know. I got to give that up. And you got to keep making, every hour of your life, you have to keep making this decision. And to live the other way is very tempting. You know, the whole world is living like that. The whole world thinks you're crazy, you know. And you got to ignore it. On the last day when everybody's dying, they'll say, you were so smart, you know. I mean, you'll have to wait a long time, right? But in the end, you know, that's the only way, right thing to do with your life. And every minute, I mean, spending your life purely in Dharma activity is the smartest thing to do because everybody has to die. And all things should be judged by this measure. You know, is this the most important thing to be doing right now, given the fact that you're going to die today? You know, then live your life like that. Okay, that's his Gyawayangumba saying, death, you know. Do I want to die doing what I'm doing right now? You know, because you will die. Don't think it's tomorrow, okay? You'll be sitting there saying, still trying to make up your mind, and you'll be dead, and it'll be too late, you know. Just get ready now, okay? Then if somebody wants you to do something else later, it's okay. Then he wrote a thing called the Six Keys, and I want you to study the Six Keys, okay? I'll write them for you. I'll read them for you in English. Key number one, and by the way, you're all going to get this after the class. You don't have to worry about writing it too much. Put your death in your heart. This is the key for checking whether your practice is tuned too light, too tight, or too loose. You want to know whether you're too fanatical or not? Would you be doing this if you were going to die in an hour? Then you know if your practice is tuned right. Tuned means not too crazy and not too loose. You know, is your practice, they call it tuning like a guitar string. You know, it's not too sharp or too flat. If your practice is too tight, you're going to fail. You know, anal. All right? If your practice is too loose, you're going to die also. It has to be tuned right in between. How do you know what's too tight and too loose? Would you be doing this if you were going to die in an hour? Okay. Number two. Think of the viper's nest of the problems of this life. This is the key for stopping attachment at the bottom of your heart. And it means, you know, think about, very simply, one sentence. Every good thing about your life, any friends you have, any family you have, any money you have, any possession you have, the place where you stay, the job that you have, the body that you're walking around in, all your clothes, your own face, and your own name, you will be stripped of shortly. All of them. Inevitably. Okay? So don't be attached to these things. Don't work for those things. Okay? That's all. Simple. Very simple. If you live like that, if you keep saying that to yourself, you'll do the right things. Okay? Number three. Let every thought be of what other people need. This is the key for making everything you do the Dharma. Okay, so he's just saying, it doesn't really matter what activity you're doing. You can work in an office in Manhattan. You can have a normal family. You can watch TV at night. But in the back of your mind all the time, you're thinking about doing things for other people's sake. Everything you do for other people's sake. If you do go watch TV, it's because you're trying to reach or make comfortable the people around you, or something like that. Everything you do is motivated for helping other people. Then what he's saying, it doesn't matter what you do, everything will become Dharma. Okay? Every activity will become Dharma. Key number, what was it? Four. Samgyu lama la gitam. Tuk yichi tujepe neyin. That's all, okay? Which means, don't think of anything but your lama. This is the key for turning your mind and theirs into one. Okay? Ultimately, if throughout your day your thoughts are focused on your lama, whoever it is, and by the way, it has to be the one that fits you. Lamas are like food, you know? I mean, different foods fit different bodies. To say that one food is good for every body is ridiculous. To say that one lama is good for every person is ridiculous. But once you find the lama that fits your needs, then let your whole day be spent in standing in their glory. You know, I spend your whole day thinking about them, serving them, being with them, communing with them, you know. And then sooner or later their mind and your mind will become one. Okay? Next key, number five, I think. Nurture yidam jongdam. Tamek shem dop neyin. That's all. See the world and the people in it as angels. This is the key for stopping the idea that life is an ordinary thing. Okay? I mean, and it, the better your practice gets, the more this white and blue cylinder will begin to take on blissful emotions for you. Okay, Rome was not built in a day. Okay, if you practice steadily, every object in your life, whether it's a pen, or the sunset, or New York City, or the people you live with, or the people you work with, or your own body and your own mind, but if you keep your vows nice, better and better and better, those things will start to transform. And ultimately, the entire world will change, and all the people in it. So he's saying, get ready. Start thinking of them that way now, because that's the way it will be. Okay? That's the way it will be. And it's very healthy to stop believing that everything is normal, because it's not. You know, you may see it that way, but you're wrong, And the more you study and the more you keep your vows, it will be revealed to you that this world is not what you thought. There's something very weird going on. There's all these special things going on around you. They will be revealed to you as you study your vows and keep your life more and more pure. It will all be revealed to you. He's saying, get ready. Okay, last thing. Whatever comes, make it crystal. This is the key for making this life turn to freedom all by itself. Okay? This life will become nirvana and paradise by itself if you can see all things as crystal. Again, this is the kind of verse that sounds so poetic and nice and can be so misunderstood by hundreds or thousands of people if you don't get a good teaching on it. Okay? You know, I've met many American young people, you know, and older people too, wandering around. You know, life is crystal. Nirvana is automatic. You know? And then they die, or, the next time you see them, they got cancer and they're in the hospital, and you're like, hey, what happened to that crystal stuff? You know, and they're like, who cares? You know, I'm dying, you know? And it's like, this statement is true, but you need to get the understanding of why. Crystal means everything is empty. The world around you is empty. Okay. Will it become nirvana by itself? No. Why not? It didn't do it yet, did it? Okay. Of course it takes effort on your side. The Buddha made great effort after the day he got bodhicitta for 75, 76, and 77,000 tens times the 60th eons. 10 to the 60th power eons. Don't tell me this world's going to turn into nirvana on it by itself. It won't. That's not what the verse means. It means if you understand how the objects and the people around you are empty, you've got all the information you need to turn it into a Buddha paradise by keeping your vows sweetly. Okay? And that's hard. And by keeping your lojong. So the fact that everything's crystal, which means empty, will make everything turn into nirvana almost automatically once you understand how to do good deeds. Okay, that's the real meaning of it. But if you wander around saying everything is crystal and I don't have to do anything because it's going to be automatic nirvana, you're going to get disappointed by a thing called a hell realm or something. Okay. Last point and then we're done. He gives a very cool 5 verses. He gives a little lojong. By the way, all these are separated by, he also said, okay, this is just reports from his students who were sitting there in the car. Hey, by the way, he also said the following, okay, and it's like 5 little, cute little powerful lines, okay, verses. So, at this point in his lojong, or his damrak, his advices, he gives 5 really beautiful verses. And in each one, he describes one of the 5 poisons of the mind. Okay? Usually we talk about 3 poisons of the mind. In Gyawang Gumba's tradition, there are 5. Okay? We're going to be talking about 5 poisons, 5 mental poisons. You know, nowadays we're memorizing something. Rinpoche asked us to memorize something. So every morning I'm walking around the temple and I'm trying to memorize something. And I noticed something very interesting. I have a problem with jealousy. Okay, I get jealous of almost anybody about anything. Okay, it's my specialty. It's my special mental affliction. And I admit it openly. You know, maybe it's a blessing I can get rid of it. But anyway, so I'll be walking around the temple trying to memorize this thing. And doing pretty good. And then I'll start to have a jealous thought about somebody. And then suddenly I notice I can't memorize anything for about 2 minutes. It's really weird. You know, like I was doing really good. And then suddenly I got jealous of somebody. And then suddenly I can't memorize anymore. For about 2 minutes, like I might as well sit down because it's not going to come for about 2 minutes. And in Tantra, by the way, there's a physical basis for that. I mean, certain things are going on in your chakras caused by that jealousy that are ruining your ability to memorize. Okay? And it's true. It's really happening. It's not just like some psychological effect. There's an actual block being created by your jealousy that's ruining your intellect at that moment. And that's a poison. Okay? Those mental afflictions are literally poison to your body and mind. And the less you have them, the more healthy you'll be physically, and the more intelligent you'll be, and the more compassionate. Okay. They really are poisoned. It's not a metaphor. They really do poison your body and your mind. Literally. Okay. First one is Durchak. Say Durchak. Durchak. Durchak, I like to call it liking things ignorantly. Liking things ignorantly. What's the test of whether you like something wrong or right? Can you like something in a good way? Of course. What? How about Buddha paradise? How about helping all other living beings? You know? How about getting a nice Michael and Zoe's milkshake legally and morally and properly? You can like that. There's no problem with that. That's fine. That's healthy. Okay? So what does Dichak mean? Dichak means where you would hurt someone to do it. You would hurt someone to get it. Okay? Why? Because that's morally repugnant? No. Because it screws you up. Okay? If you're going to hurt someone else to get what you want, that's the best way, according to the laws of karma, to never get that thing again. Okay? If you don't like money or fame or good Michael and Zoe's milkshakes, then hurt someone else to get them, and you will assure yourself future problems to get them. Okay? So Durchak means liking things in a stupid way. Okay? It's not wrong to like things. The Buddha would like to see you get out of this problem. Is he ignorant? No. Does he have Durchak? No. Does he like things? Yes. Watch the Dalai Lama eat. He's enjoying himself. He likes the food. Does he have Durchak about the food? No. Okay. It's a different thing. Okay. Say, Dewa Tamche. Okay. If you can overcome this tendency of liking things the wrong way, you can get every kind of happiness you ever wanted. That's Dewa Tamche. Okay? That's the result of acting the opposite way. I refuse to hurt someone to get what I want. Why? Because I want more of it. Get it? Alright? Okay. Say Shedang. Shedang is the opposite emotion. Not liking something or disliking something stupidly in a non-dharma way. Okay. Do the Buddhas dislike things? Yes. What do they dislike? Oh, they dislike to see you suffer. How's that? They dislike to suffer themselves. Okay. Do they have mental poisons? No. Okay. What's the test of whether you're disliking something intelligently or not? Would you hurt someone to get rid of it? If you stop acting this way, you can get Dungyel Dangjawa. Dungyel Dangjawa means no more pain in this life at all. Okay? No more pain at all. Okay? Okay, poison number three. I'm going to the poisons fast because we got to leave in 11 minutes or something. Okay? By the way, it is all in the reading, so don't worry. Okay? Say, Timuk Changchu Topa. Okay? Timuk means not understanding the world in the way I've described it today. Okay? Timuk means ignorance about the way the world really works. Okay? The guy did not screw you at work because he's a bad guy. The guy screwed you at work because you created him when you were bad to someone else before. Get it? Okay, if you don't get it, you got dimug. Okay. If you do get it, and you stop reacting to the world as if it was coming from its own side, you are gonna changchu topa. You are going to achieve enlightenment. Okay, if you can stop thinking of things as being other people's fault. Okay, stop thinking of things as coming from their other side. All of these sufferings were made by you. Very famous in the sutra. Buddha says, do you think the hell realms were made by Acme Construction Company? You know, there was some sadistic maestro who paid for all the concrete and the steel and the molten lead, you know, and stuff, and pays for the oil bills for the fires in hell, you know? You think there's some guy like that? Where do you think they came from? You know, do you think someone made them? Of course, it's your own perception. Okay? And anything you don't like is coming that way too. Okay? Okay, number four. Where did number four go? Say Nagya. I'll let you finish writing. Okay, Nagya. Na means me. Gyal means king. Me, king, is the Tibetan word for
pride.
Okay. Wrong pride, by the way. It's not bad to be proud when you just gave up the profit and took the loss yourself. You could say, good job, Michael Rhodes. Out of 10,000 lifetimes, you finally did something for somebody else. Hey, not bad. That's all right. That's a good pride. Okay, bad pride is like, I don't have to listen to him. I'm as smart as him. Or something like that. Okay? That's Nagya. If you could stop thinking that way, you know, if you could relate to other people as your teacher, you know, if you could go around New York City thinking, every being in this city has something to teach me, let me listen, maybe I'll learn something. Then the karmic result of that is Rango Tumba. Say Rango Tumba. Rango Tumba. Rango Tumba, even now in colloquial Tibetan, is a very special word that means totally independent. You know, I saw in a book one time, they called it, well, it was a bad word, I can't repeat it. Anyway, it's the point at which you don't need anybody else. You can tell the whole world to, okay? You have everything you need. Rango Tumba means money, knowledge, compassion, intelligence, dharma, everything. You are complete in and of yourself. That's Rango Tumba. Rango Tumba means you want to be like that, like a whole person who's self-sufficient in themselves, in their own dharma knowledge, and in their own wisdom, and in their own meditation, and their own morality. They are Rango Tumba means, I did it. I grew up. I'm independent. Okay? Mean in a good way. Okay? You are like, now you are like a bulwark in the world. You are like a pillar of strength in the world. You can stand on your own as a Dharma person. That's called Rango Tumba. Okay? But if you're jealous, if you have pride, you'll never get to Rango Tumba. Karmically, you cannot reach that state if you have pride. Okay? Last one. Say chakto. Chakto. Chakto means, well, you guys finish writing, then I'll tell you what it means. Say get tamje selwa. Okay, chakto means jealousy. Okay, all you aspiring bodhisattvas out there, how about a definition for jealousy? The state of mind that cannot see other people get what they want. It's like disgusting for a bodhisattva. Okay? Really bad. You know, your career is supposed to be the international supplier of happiness to all beings. And instead, you're like the international Scrooge who wants to make sure nobody gets what they want. Okay? I mean, that's the state of mind of jealousy. Jealousy is unhappy when other people get what they were hoping for. Okay? That's chakto. That's jealousy. As long as you think that way, your life will be full of obstacles. You know, every time you get close to something, something will go wrong. Every time something you want, something will go wrong with it. You'll miss out. You'll be a day late and a dollar short for the rest of your life. Because you couldn't stand it when other people got what they got, what they wanted. Okay. Karmically, it'll keep happening to you that as you get closer to the things you want, people you want to be with, places you want to live, work that you want, money that you want, place that you want, there'll always be some kind of obstacle. And the karma is that you were jealous of other people. Okay? So if you can stop that, then gektam jay means obstacles. Selwa means you'll be able to remove them. Karmically, it won't happen anymore. Everything will go smooth. Okay. Okay, real last thing. He has one line at the end, which again, and this is the delicate part of the, I think, a lot of these kinds of teachings. They are very powerful, short comments that this Lama made in a divine state to his personal disciples, who in many cases, that you're going to get next week, those disciples had had 12 years of Buddhist logic, advanced philosophy, emptiness teachings, constant teachings of the great classics of ancient India. They were master scholars of thousands of texts. In many cases, they had memorized hundreds of technical Buddhist texts in the way that you've been doing for the last 6 years or something. Then he taught them Lojong. Okay. Then he said, quote, "The reality of things is beyond the mind. So reside in a state where you hold to nothing." Okay. They know what he really means, but you don't go teaching this to new people. You know, they know when he says the reality of things is beyond the mind, he's saying something like, until the day you see emptiness directly, you are not perceiving ultimate reality. It doesn't mean that this is not reality. If you don't think so, let me hit you on the head with an illusory 2x4. And let's see if you get an illusory bump on your head. And then you tell me this is all an illusion. It doesn't mean that. Of course it's not beyond the mind. Of course you're experiencing reality right now. But ultimate reality is beyond your current state of perception. And if you practice and study carefully, you can see ultimate reality. That's what he really means. It doesn't mean no one could ever see it, or else no one could ever reach nirvana. Okay? So reside in a state where you hold to nothing. It doesn't mean sit there like you're on heroin and meditate with your brain just wiped out. Okay? It doesn't mean that. It means don't think this thing has any nature of its own, from its own side. Don't hold to it as being a pen from its own side. It's not. Don't hold to your own body and mind being a crummy old unenlightened being because it's that way from its own side. It's not. It's blank. It's empty. You can make it anything you want if you keep your vows, if you meditate regularly, and if you learn proper Buddhism, because those things are empty, you can reach a Buddha paradise. That's what he means by don't grasp them as existing from their own side. He doesn't mean go space out in a corner somewhere, okay? And that's why they didn't give these verses to new people, because it sounds like that. And I'm afraid a lot of Westerners have gotten a hold of things like this and wasted years of their lives, okay? These are very powerful if you know what they mean, and you have to have a good teaching on them, okay? So you teach them that way to your students, all right? Okay, we'll do some prayers now and then we'll go.
Sasi Bhagi Jusin Metasham Rira Vinci Nyende Kempati Sange Shindu Mite Kuvahi Jogunanda Shimla
to Lojong, Developing the Good Heart with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.